a counselor, a coach, and a spiritual director walk into a bar. What comes next is either the greatest punchline of all time or a conversational cocktail that could change your life forever. Jake, Liz, and John are offering you a unique three-way perspective on common mental, emotional, and spiritual struggles. Only you know which perspective you need the most. So grab your favorite beverage, listen in, and decide who you're gonna call.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast, Who You Gonna Call? I'm John Malloy, spiritual director, and I'm joined by Liz, the life coach, and Jacob, the, what do you do? therapist. We're so glad you've joined us once again. So just as a reminder, we are walking through sessions or practices, not really practices, but like you are actually getting to witness a session that we are putting together. So tonight you have the treat of seeing a coaching session. Woo-hoo. And Liz is going to be coaching Jacob this session. So as we said before, this is not rehearsed. Jacob is actually bringing stuff and he's very eager to do this. Liz is ready to go. So without further ado, I am going to turn it over to these two masters.
So fun. So excited. Okay. Jake, do you mind if we start with a prayer and then we'll get started?
Let's do it.
All right. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Come, Holy Spirit. Come, Holy Spirit. Thank you, Lord, so much for this time of coaching with Jacob. Please bless our session. Help me to get out of the way and let you do all the coaching, and help Jake to let you to do all the listening for him. Anything that needs to come up, please allow it to come up and be addressed. And give Jake the peace and the joy and anything else that you have intended for him this evening. And we ask this coaching session to be covered in the mantle of Our Lady and the cloak of Saint Joseph. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. All right. What would you like coaching on today?
So I was thinking about it, what I wanted to bring to the table, and mm-hmm. I figured this is a very practical one, something that I've been struggling with this semester. So to make it all short, up to this point, I was asked to teach a college class for Franciscan theology of healing. So I haven't had history of teaching. I mean, I did youth ministry, but nothing in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I was entering into the big leagues, mm-hmm. Which I was really excited for. And I love teaching. I love this course, teaching on theology of the healing. And I love working with the students. But so this is unknown territory for me. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I've been finding is pretty much consistently after every lecture, when I walk out of class and head to my car and go into my car and then drive off to work or sessions, I am bombarded with all these critical thoughts about how I did poorly in my lectures. Now, I kind of disclose this to my students, where I'm so used to engaging with clients and being able to perceive how well I'm doing based off the what they say back to me and their body behavior. Now, granted, you know, during lecture, I see head nods and I see smiles, and I try to crack a joke here and there and tell stories, okay. But for the most part, it's like I'm throwing things at them. Mm-hmm. And them not necessarily engaging with me. Mm-hmm. It's just the style, right? And that's just something that's new and different for me. So because there's that lack of information that I'm used to receiving to determine how well I'm doing, I'm coming away again, criticizing myself and struggling with, did I do a good job? Okay. Very recently, though, there were a few indicators that I'm doing a good job. But then what has come up from that is, well, you may be doing a good job now, but you got the whole next rest of the semester ahead of you, that may change. So I've been struggling to, let's say this, I've been struggling to not let them there. I've been very intentional with trying to disconnect from them, which has worked. But consistently, every time I'm in that car, I have to spend like a couple minutes diffusing and disconnecting from those thoughts.
Okay. So when you're in the car and mm-hmm. you're feeling negative about the session that you just had with your students, what are you thinking? Like, what are some of the common thoughts that pop up for you?
Did I do a good job? Mm-hmm. What if I'm not doing a good job? What if they didn't like the lecture? Mm-hmm.
I'm going to challenge you. All of those are questions. Those aren't statements.
Sure.
So how would you change it to a statement?
I didn't do a good job. Okay. I would say they don't like me as the professor. Mm. Okay. Especially the quiz. I did a quiz. And again, if my students are listening to this, here's inside what's going on in my head. So you're welcome. But I had to put together a quiz at the beginning of the semester, and only a good handful, I would say like a quarter of my students did a good job. The other didn't hit that range that I was hoping for. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I blamed myself for that. There was a lot of, I think for them, they were learning how my style, and I was learning how just to put together a quiz. Mm-hmm. But I was like, this is my fault. I take full responsibility.
So I heard a couple of thoughts in there, and mm-hmm. I want to see if any of these are sort of the most heavy and we can work through it. I heard I didn't do a good job. They don't like me as their professor. This is my fault.
That's accurate.
Which one feels heaviest?
They don't like me as the professor.
Okay. And when you think they don't like me as their professor, what's your one word emotion that comes up?
I'll go ahead and say anxious.
Okay. So I want to challenge that a little bit too, because I think anxiety can be a little bit of an indulgent emotion. You can kind of just get cozy in there. Mm-hmm. So if we think of anxiety as a blanket and you were lifting it up and looking underneath, what's underneath the anxiety?
Fear of the unknown. Okay. This is unknown territory for me. And I have no basis of evaluation, except for the end of the semester, they're going to do an evaluation, which is like, okay, I got to wait till the end of the semester to really kind of get a hard factual how well I did. Mm-hmm. But because it's so unknown, there's this resistance because, we're going head already in it, but mm-hmm. almost a hesitation or a fear of the unknown.
Okay. So when you're thinking they don't like me as a professor and you're feeling that fear, how do you show up? Is there anything you do or don't do when you're feeling fear?
I keep it internal. So, okay. I do one of those kind of, you just got to show up and put your best foot forward and see how it goes. And again, something I'm learning just to, don't take yourself too seriously, laugh at yourself. And usually that kind of breaks the ice, and that has helped. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it's the internal struggle, the tension maybe in my chest, in my mm-hmm. muscles. Mm-hmm. And usually it's afterwards. It's not even before. Before I have like a routine, I drop Austin off to school. At that time, we'll listen to praise and worship. But then from his school to the university, I'm pumping up pump up music. I'm disconnecting from any negative thoughts. Mm-hmm. I'm in the zone. And when I show up, I'm smiling, I'm engaged, yada, yada. And I give it my best shot. But then when mm-hmm. I get back into the car, again, for like those first 5 minutes, it's like a battle of tension, just a lot of like interior, you know, like they don't like me. It's like, get out of here. I don't want to talk to you. You know, just trying to be focused and bring out the music again. And so I guess in one sense, it's like, okay, is that typical, let's say, as to would that be the battle? Or does the battle have to be there in the first place? It's kind of getting, let's say, kind of get to a point where I don't even have to think twice. So I can get in the car and not even be considering that I did a good or bad job.
Sure. So let me ask you this then. What do you want to feel when you get in the car? What's the emotion that you're looking for?
Satisfaction. I want to walk away and be like, that's right. I had a good session, lecture. Now, it's interesting, but there were specific lectures where I got that. And those were times where, like, I kind of went, not rogue, but I went beyond just my lecture notes. Like, I was more me in the context of, like, more passionate, more energetic. And I felt like I landed some planes. when it comes to points I want them to walk away from. And then either that or there was a lot of laughter and I could tell that there was chemistry. Walking away from that, I'm like, that was awesome.
Okay. So then here's my little devil's advocate question. Can you feel satisfaction in the work that you did without their approval?
Well, that's the goal, right? And I think maybe that's something that I'm noticing is that I have a tendency to want people's approval to determine how well I did, knowing that I did a good job, or at least maybe since I think I did a good job and that's enough. And so my question then is, or my struggle then is, why isn't enough? Why is me saying I did a good job, I performed the best I could in a place that's new to me? So again, I think I have a lot of expectations on myself that I'm supposed to be such a good professor as these 10 year plus professors. Like, this is new.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I think I would challenge you in two different ways there. One is, do you expect your students to know everything before you teach it?
Nope.
So can you, as a new professor, give yourself the same type of grace that you would give your students?
Yes and no. So because I thought of that, you know, and at least the last couple of weeks, I've been a little bit more vulnerable with my students. Sharing them, like the other day, I shared with them, just like, guys, be honest with you, I am not a patient man. And this, we were talking about some kind of vice. We were talking about something. So I figured to tell them a story or tell them a little bit more of like where I struggle.
Yeah.
It's okay. But I have not necessarily let on. I have not necessarily said, oh, by the way, this is my first college class ever. Because there's a certain level of credibility that I want to maintain. And I feel like if I disclose or simply said out loud, this is my first ever college class, I'll lose respect and I'll lose some of that mystery or credibility. And I think it's coming out a little bit more now, though, because how I'm formatting my midterm for this Friday, I'm coming across as, I don't know what I'm doing. And that, again, I think the negative criticism is like, now they see you as an imposter or a fraud and you don't know what you're doing, and either they're going to take advantage these are my perceptions. Again, anyone who's listening, this is not necessarily a you thing. This is a me thing. But the perception is like, okay, now I feel like I'm an imposter, you know? That's...
Okay. Now, okay. If we were to go into worst case scenario world, you go in next class and say, by the way, this is my first class as a professor, and everybody loses respect for you. What does that mean about you? What are you making that mean?
No, what are you doing? What it would mean, I guess in one sense, right? So if you follow that thought, it wouldn't mean that I'm not a good professor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think another component to that, though, is like, okay, it's not even for them, too. I'm trying to do a good job so that they ask me to come back. Because mm-hmm. I love doing this. It's something that I'm finding to really enjoy. And so in one sense, I'm like, I got to make sure my supervisors, you know, are mm-hmm. satisfied.
Now, another question, another sort of devil's advocate question is, have you ever been in a class where almost no one gets an A?
Have I? Yes.
And did it mean anything about the professor?
No, but I've been on the other side where there were professors that we ripped into. So I've seen it, mm-hmm. you know. And so again, those were things, and there were some distinctions too, where again, I know what didn't work and what worked, you know, in my experience and for my classmates at that time experience. And again, there's recently been confirmation that we're doing, I'm doing a good job, you know.
Yeah.
Now it's interesting because it's like 30 plus students, and so can I expect to please all of them? No.
Right.
But somehow I get into this absolute all or nothing thinking. So help me, Liz. What do I do with the all or nothing thinking?
All or nothing thinking is one of my favorite things. It's a classic melancholic trait, and that is my secondary temperament. And I think what I would say in that, in this situation, is I think that you have a manual for your students. That you need them to feel a certain way for you to feel a certain way. You need them mm-hmm. to think a certain way for you to think a certain way. And to experience full freedom and to be able to truly show up as the professor that God is calling you to be, you need to start to question those manuals. I can't feel like this until you guys treat me like this. That's not true, right? Because you know, especially as a counselor, you know your own power over your own emotions, that yes, they need to be processed and they need to be worked through, but that you can change your emotions, that you can be thinking different things, that you can be working through your emotions to get to a better place, right? So mm-hmm. even if tomorrow you walked into your classroom and all of your students threw tomatoes at you, it wouldn't be ideal. You wouldn't love it, but you could, in the right emotional brain space, you could be like, that means nothing about me, right?
So
that actually says something more about them, honestly.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that understanding the distinction between people can say and do what they want, but that's not going to define who I am.
Right.
Where right now, maybe there's a certain level of like, I'm allowing circumstances of whether they are having a good day and they're like attentive.
Right.
Or they're just tired and I'm noticing a few of them dozing off and it's like, oh crap, I'm the worst professor ever. Whereas like, I'm letting that define me.
Right. Right. Because honestly, you have no idea what's going on in their lives, right? For all you know, they were up super late studying for somebody else's class, or their girlfriend just broke up with them, or a myriad of other things could be going on, or they're just college students and they were up late partying and they're tired, you know, but there's a myriad of other things that does not include Jake's class is the worst, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this then, because, okay, let's say there's an acceptance that this doesn't define me. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting as well. I've noticed that the first half of the semester has been like more like the intense battle of disconnecting from my thoughts. It's quieted mm-hmm. down now just because my brain's readapting and it's like, okay, great. It's learning. Then it's not done, right? So there's been a little bit of confirmation where people have said, like, this has been a great class. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I can't even take that because the anxious thought comes in and says, well, that may be true, but you got the rest of the semester going for you. Like, you know, you're going to bomb it by the end of the semester. So it's almost like I can't even take anything good mm-hmm. and, let's say, relish in it. As if it was not even reinforcer as a causation that like it was the cause of my good, but just saying like, hey, you're doing a good job, and that's okay to experience. Mm-hmm. I can't even like learn. I struggle to receive that. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with that? How to resist? Yeah.
Does your wife ever tell you you're a good husband?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
do you say to yourself, well, sure, but I've got like 50 years left of this marriage and I've got plenty of time to screw it up?
I don't say that. I tend to say instead, yeah, I'm good now. But give me another hour or two, or give me another day, or give me a bad situation and I'll show up differently. I mean, I don't want to, but that's the reality of it. That like, it doesn't sustain me. You know, and so if we're talking about like a larger, if we're drawing that out, I think that's one of the things that I notice more generalized in my day-to-day life as a whole, not just in work, is this idea that like, yeah, I can receive something short-term, but it doesn't sustain me as well. She says I'm a good wife, a good husband. How come that can't go from one day to the next?
Well, then I would challenge you in two ways. I would say one is there's truth in that because we don't know what tomorrow will bring and we don't know what 10 years from now will bring and 15 years from now and all of those things, right? So in a way, that thought, essentially, that belief that I'm not enough, that I could always make a mistake, you can turn back and look at that and say, I know. And, you know, it's sort of that know your demon moment where, you know, I've heard people say, you know, when the devil tells you you're not enough, turn around and say, you're right, I'm not, but God is. And I'm going to keep trusting him to carry me through for the moments when I'm not enough. Right. So there's that. And I had another one. Oh, came and it went. But I think the other thing is we can believe something and it can be true, but it still might not be helpful. So thinking I still have time to screw this up may just be true. Like, because we all make mistakes, right? And so, you know, that may be true, but if it's not inspiring you to be the best professor, it could become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I see. Yeah.
You know, where you're focusing so much on how you might screw up, you know, like I want to make sure I don't get to the edge of this cliff. And so all you're doing is looking at the cliff and you're slowly being drawn towards it because that's where your attention is. Right. So just because it's true doesn't mean it's useful to you. So what is a thought that is more useful and believable and just as true right now? And in this case, it could be, I had a really good day today. So tell me what you're thinking.
No, it's interesting because I think, yeah, I appreciate the fact that, yeah, my core definition of self is not found in anyone but God. So saying that, yeah, I'm weak. Yeah, this is new and saying, it comes kind of getting myself off the hook, really taking away some of those expectations. I'm like, okay, that's very helpful. The new thought, I think, the realistic thought, I think for me, it would be something to the idea of, did I give it 100%? You know, did I give it my best shot? And is that good enough? And to say, like, and that's good enough.
Yeah, I was going to say, and switch it from a question to a statement. I gave 100% today.
And that's good enough. And if it didn't do what I set out to do, I got the next day, you know, or let's say the next lecture. And that guy can use whatever he wants to use. So really, it's like, again, almost like restructuring, not just expectation, but the responsibility. If I believe I'm just an instrument of God, as long as I give him 100%, I hit the mark.
Yeah.
Even though I may have flopped in whatever capacity or whatever evaluation is used, God can still use that in whatever capacity he wants. And he is. And I'll be honest with you, that's something of the things I love about being a therapist and now a professor is I'm going to just be me. I'm going to share things that are important and that needs to be known. And it's up to you whether or not you want to take it. And okay, you know. So I think if anything, be satisfied with the percentage of what I give rather than how I gave it.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
So much more freeing.
It is. So here's the interesting part, though, right? And not to say I'm finding excuses, but for someone who wants to grow, so it's interesting because as learning to surrender all that, how does one practically evaluate the facts and say, okay, I still need to grow as a professor. There are skills I don't know that I think it's important for me to know to better my lectures. So how does one disenlarge and not find the identity in the criticism, but be critical of what needs to be actually factually improved and not get the two intermixed?
I think it's going to boil down to your language and how you say it, you know, not I'm not a good professor or I'm a bad professor, but I am in the process of learning how to become a professor or how to be a professor, you know? So you're using language that is true, but it's not loaded language. It's not painful language. It's factual. If you want to be factual, then be factual. Don't be emotional, right? And facts are very boring. Facts are very, like, they kind of put you to sleep. You know, hi, I'm Liz Sines, and I have brown hair and brown eyes. Like, that's just true. Not saying I'm Liz Sines, and I have brown hair and brown eyes, and I'm a hot mess. That's emotional, right? Like, I do have brown eyes. That's provable in a court of law. I have brown hair. That's provable in a court of law. Me being a hot mess is an opinion that I have about myself. So you being a good professor or a bad professor is an opinion that people are going to have about you and that you're going to have about yourself. But is it provable in a court of law? Versus Jake's notes were written backwards this morning, you know, like something that someone can actually look at and see and be like, oh, that was, you know, it has to be something that, again, if it came to court, they'd be like, oh yeah, this is provable. The jury all agrees. We all see it. Not just Jake's not a good professor. Well, how do we know?
Yeah. I appreciate that because then it helps me reconstruct a different standard of evaluation that when people do share the good, I can rejoice in that. And I can appreciate that and acknowledge that although good, it reinforces what's already good. And then if criticized, to separate, okay, that's in your opinion, I get it. And you allow that opinion. While the facts, you know, the facts stand to be true, okay, I'll accept the facts, but it doesn't ruin the good, and which is still there. So either way, what I'm hearing is a win-win.
Yeah. Either way, you know, it's that whole you win or you learn, right? So there's no win or lose. It's win or learn.
You win or learn. Oh, man, I like that. Cool.
Awesome. All righty. Well, I think we can bring John back as long as you're feeling ready for that.
You there, John? Back.
There you are. Poor John's been sending us little messages. Guys, you got the two talkers here, John.
God bless you, John.
We could keep going.
It's funny, we were talking about this before we started recording. How do we do that?
We ignore John.
And then I changed my name to, for those of you who can't see, I renamed myself on this lovely thing, 25-minute ding. So that I knew.
We were supposed to go 15 to 17 minutes, and Jake and I went 25 minutes. Cause it's not good or bad. It's just different.
Yeah. That's all right. I didn't want to disrupt you because it seemed like there was such a great flow going and real, like a real new beginning in some sense. So it just felt wrong to, like, at the time we had originally intended to go, hey, by the way, I know you're making great headway, but could you hurry up the headway? That didn't seem right. So that was phenomenal. So Jacob, I'd love to ask you just overall, what did it feel like sharing about those negative thoughts and like the process and where are you sitting right now?
So first off, I do feel a bit right now, like, a little anxious, maybe, or hesitant that, like, okay, like, I did share about something that, like, is personal, but knowing that the impact of my students to me have been incredible. So this is not just, as again, me a disclaimer, is like the fears, the experience is not because I'm seeing something that's happening factually, but what's all in my head. So I want to make sure that like the goodness of my students have always been there. So that's where I'm at. The session itself was very phenomenal, very insightful. I'll be honest with you, Liz, you came out very challenging. Like I was not expecting the challenges right away. Something I noticed. That's something
I'm... You were looking for me to be all playful, and I was like, yeah, playing hardball.
She sought and destroyed.
I've been listening to this podcast where this counselor talks about seek and destroy.
Can I get a t-shirt going, baby?
Merch.
Amen. If you would like merch, please message us so that we can get that ball rolling.
We would like
please
merch do. Too, especially I know, Jake. He's been dying for merch.
All it takes is one person. Be that one person. Tell us you want it, and it will be here. So, Jake, kind of going along with that. So, how did this for you as the recipient differ from like a therapy session where you're sharing sharing some things you're wrestling with, dealing with, or whatnot?
Right. I think if anything, this stayed a little bit consistently cognitive. And again, therapy can stay there as well. So I would say when it comes to exploration of thoughts, I would say that's similar. I think what differed a lot was Liz explaining, you know, how she explained things and the different language she used. And I'm remind me, Liz, but I feel like the word like, oh, is that a loaded question? I feel like that's a more of a coaching question than like a psychological question.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's more coaching and it's also a little bit Liz.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of the two.
Nice. So Liz, from your end, how do you feel about this and where things went? Is that how it usually goes?
It was so cool. It was fun to coach Jake specifically because we're related through marriage, and it there's always a little bit of a tension to coach somebody that you know more personally, because you're like, oh, you don't normally see me in this capacity. It's a little nerve wracking. So I definitely did some praying about it beforehand. Like, Lord, okay, this is a coaching session. I'm going to come clean to this session. But I think it was cool to just get this opportunity to kind of explore some of the things that honestly come up a lot in coaching sessions, like imposter syndrome, you know, and these fears that we have about what others think of us. And my very first time being coached was on a problem I was having with joining a mom's group where I was really worried about what the other ladies thought of me. And I remember the coach saying, do you think they're thinking about you right now? And I said, oh, probably not. Like it was hours later. And she's like, right, they're thinking about the dumb thing they said this morning, not the dumb thing you said this morning. And it's just this freeing experience of being like, to see that all the human brains work the same, right? We all have these thoughts that other people have these huge expectations of us, or that we're letting them down in some way or anything. And so every time I come to a coaching session, it feels... I'm watching somebody else be vulnerable, and I'm sure that they're uncomfortable sometimes, and maybe they're saying things they wish they hadn't said out loud. But what I'm hearing is we have so much more in common as the human race than we realize. We always think we're isolated and alone, and I'm the only one who thinks this way. I'm the only one who feels this way. I'm the only one who's such a mess or who has these struggles. And to hear other people get coached is always this revelation of like, we are so similar. We all struggle with this stuff. So that's just, I really love that about coaching. So I was like, Jake, you're not alone.
So as the session was going on, I kind of plotted out, here's what the roadmap looked like. So it started off with, Jake, you're starting off showing, here's what I'm wrestling with. And then Liz, you like cut to the chase and started talking about, okay, what are the thoughts? And what is the language behind the thoughts? And even challenging them, like, that's a question, not a statement. I want you to really say the statement. Can you say a little bit more about what's the difference in coaching between that question and statement?
There's less ownership in a question. You're kind of looking at it from far away and you're not taking ownership of what you're actually feeling and thinking. So, am I a failure? You're thinking I'm a failure, but you're afraid to say that because that sounds scary. That sounds convicting, right? So if I keep it in question land, I'm sort of safe from it. I can sort of hide and pretend that that's not really how I feel. So when you have somebody say it as a statement, it gets a lot heavier and a lot bigger all of a sudden. And then you can really work with that. Like, wow, why do you think that about yourself? That's really, that's a burden that you're carrying around. And let's be honest about it and work through it.
Yeah. So Jake, when she pressed in on that questioning that you had, what was going through your head and thoughts?
I was surprised. And I say surprised, and I want to say surprised as in like a bad surprise. It was more of a, oh yeah, like just like getting right to it, you know? Now obviously circumstantially and you know, the period of time, it's like, well, let's get to the root of it. So it caught me off guard just a little bit only because, well, I don't know. Maybe there was a resistance. I'm like, I don't want to go there. You know?
So why do we have to go there now? Your clients are like, that's how it feels, Jake.
They're going, go, Liz, go, Liz, go, Liz. Give him the chair.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Turn on my spotlight, start grilling you. Where are your rebel friends now?
I'm wondering, Liz, though, so it's interesting. Is that your typical language you use? Like, and the reason I say that is because, and not to give too much of an insight to like the therapy session, but you use the language of, can I challenge you here? Can I play the devil's advocate? I would say that that's a very, in the context of like, actually, not personality types, but it's a very confrontational approach. Would you say that like that's, are you a confrontational approach coach? You know, I would say like in the context of flavor of coaches, it seems like you were very, let's go to it. Let's not mess around. Do you feel like that's your style?
Not completely. I feel like I've adopted it a little bit because I'm naturally a people pleaser and I don't like to get to the point too fast if I feel like someone doesn't want to be there. And coaching has challenged me to just ask the question because someone can tell me, I don't want to answer that. And that's fine. You know, but if I don't ask the question, we're not going to find out what's going on under there. So, you know, sometimes, you know, maybe in the context of devil's advocate, maybe that's a little strong in the wording, but, you know, but in the sense of just, I have to show you that you're thinking this right now. I have to show you that like I'm reflecting your mind to you. I'm a mirror. And so I can't lie. I can't pretend that it's different than I see it. Right. Like a mirror is just going to show you like, you have a zit on your nose. It's not going to gently blur it, right? Like it's just going to. So that's sort of my job in this moment is to mirror back your thoughts to you and be like, you see what you're saying here? Like, are you aware that this is what this is what I heard? Is that what you meant? You know, so it's that opportunity again to try and kind of just like look at it honestly, especially because a lot of the time in coaching, you know, clients, and I do this myself, we want to look outward. We want to look at the other people, whether it's like, well, my spouse does this, my kids are like this, and my students are like this, or whatever it is. You know, these people out here, like that is why I'm stressful. And it's like, no, you're stressed out because of whatever you're thinking about those people, your expectations of those people. So we need to bring it back to you. And it's going to be super uncomfortable because I would much rather be just like your fun friend and be like, yeah, he's a jerk. It'd be way easier, but I can't, I need to be like, is he actually a jerk? Or like, are you struggling with some thoughts about him that we need to work through? You know? So if that answers your question.
Well, and in the, as an observer to this, it seemed like you were just like, okay, I see here's the most pressing issue or the most direct issue, let's address it and actually press deeper. But that's from the outside. So it's interesting. There's like the thought and then you challenge the language. And then like there was an exploration of what's the emotion that's going through as you're doing that. And then like into action. And then you went into like, okay, what kind of change do you desire? At least that's what I observed.
Yeah.
Now, something that I was wondering was Jacob is a very introspective person, both by trade, but also like his personality.
Yeah.
So how does the introspection of the client affect the coaching?
It's a lot easier when they're introspective, because that knowledge of their emotions and of what's going on inside of them and being able to recognize their actions, you know, because honestly, sometimes when somebody says, what do you avoid doing when you're feeling with that? People are like, I don't know. And it's like, well, most of us, you know, we avoid taking action. We avoid, you know, taking ownership. You know, you can, if you're an introspective person, you can see that stuff. I have clients who are like, I don't know what emotion I'm feeling. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to work through some words with you, see which one sticks, you know, and we bring out the emotions wheel and we talk about, okay, which feeling are you feeling here? You know? So it's definitely easier when the client is naturally an introspective person. And it is the fun thing about Jake that I've known since, you know, he and Margaret started dating, is he always wants to go deep in a conversation. He never stays surface level. You know, I remember just getting to know him. My sister's new boyfriend would come over and he'd be like asking me like deep, meaningful questions about marriage. And I'd be like, dude,
just bet you, man.
It's Sunday brunch, man. Like,
back off.
But it was good because it would make me ponder. I'd be like, I don't know. How am I handling that? You know? So, yeah, but I was curious from your perspective, John, like watching this happen, like, was there anything specific that kind of struck you about the session that was just different, you know, cause we just went through the spiritual direction session and that was so peaceful, you know, like there was so much peace, and getting feedback from you guys, I feel like I was a little bit of like a drill sergeant. So I'm just curious about like, what's your experience of this, seeing it happen?
I thought it had a very great flow, and like there is purpose to this meeting. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure we're getting to the foundational piece, not just whatever the fluff is. Mm-hmm. And you had Jacob as a client who already had some of the not only relationship with you to kind of grow from, but also some of the already present internal tools. And you were like walking through this systematic, but not in a bad way, no negative connotation, like. Mm-hmm. A very good way to get him to recognize maybe a new thought. Mm-hmm. And then, which then changes the emotional connection and action that comes out of that.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say drill sergeant at all. I'd say just very purposeful. Purposeful.
Mm-hmm. I would say surgeon like you know, like you get right to, and it, you, not slice and dice, but I don't know how. I mean, I doubt that that's what they do.
You have to coach him through about coaching, and you just chopped me up mercilessly.
But no, so therapy is seek and destroy. Coaching is slice and dice. I can't wait till.
Oh, oh my goodness!
And then like, a T-shirt. Spiritual direction.
Peaceful inner peace.
Inner peace.
Oh my gosh. Rock. But no, I it's interesting because I think I let's say this. I can see the skill set very much present with you, Liz, in that you know the right questions to ask, you know how to get to it, and you really know how to just make that change happen. And it's interesting. I think it was a couple episodes before you mentioned how coaching can actually be done within 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I can see why. Like that makes a lot of sense as to it, utilizing this approach. It's like, yeah, like, you know, you can get in, get out, and not in the sense of like it being meaningfulness, but this idea of why beat around the bush? Why would we not? I will want to ponder this, Liz, and I'm curious how you do this. I think there was a certain, I think, advantage in the fact that like there's rapport already built.
Yeah.
Would you go that straight into it with a new client day one? Like this is the first.
I was wondering that too.
So for me with my own clients, it's much gentler. The very first coaching session that we do together is a goal setting session. So this is like my discovery call with them. I want to talk goals. Like, what do you want out of this coaching relationship? Okay. Where do you see this going? How do you want to be different in 12 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever the coaching session is? And then if they decide to sign on with me, I already have their goals. So we can get started day one on their first official day seriously. Now, the thing is, I was originally trained by Metanoia Catholic and I coached in their academy for a while. So I would have 20-minute coaching calls with academy members who I did not know, who did not know me, and I only had 20 minutes. Wow. So there wasn't time to have this nicey-nice get-to-know-each-other conversation. I needed to find the thought, and we needed to work through it, and I had to be done before the top of the hour, before the the 30-minute mark of the hour. So because that was the way the sessions were set up in the academy. And it was beautiful because what it taught me for myself and for other people was you can flip your whole day around in 20 minutes. However difficult your day is, if you know how to manage your thoughts and if you know how to process your emotions, you can change that narrative of that day. You don't have to get up and have a horrible morning and be like, well, the day's shot. Now it's just, I'm in a bad mood today. You can stop any time of the day and be like, wait, what am I thinking? Is it helpful? Is it 100% true? What else is just as true? What else can I believe right now that is more helpful that can give me a better day? How do I want to feel today? Because sometimes it's not even that you want to feel happy. You want to feel peace. You want to feel resignation. You want to feel acceptance. Like there's other things you want to feel. And it shocked me even to learn that we actually don't want to be happy as much as we just want to be peaceful. Like we just want to feel like calm and, you know, not stressed and anxious and angry and all of those things. I don't have to feel like sparkles and butterflies, but I would love to just feel like it's okay. Everything's fine. We're going to be okay. So anyways, that's what that taught me is that like, I don't need a whole day. I don't need a retreat. I don't need a month away. I don't need vacation. I need 20 minutes to get my head on straight the way I want it to be. And I can go back out and meet this day and I can maintain my interior peace.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying, what you're saying, Liz, is your coaching sessions is modeling to them how they can do that
right
themselves.
And what I was thinking was it was interesting to see how you in this modeling you shared here's the reality of what you saw. Okay, yeah, he had this one thought, but there's other alternatives, there's other scenarios, what's the worst case, like you went through this kind of exercise of examination of what he was feeling and then at the end suggested something else and there's like this light bulb moment. And Jake, I don't know if you felt it, but like, did you have that light bulb? Like what are you coming away from this particular session with?
So yeah, there was a greater insight. And I'll be I had my therapy session with my therapist earlier today. And we talked about something else, but it came back to this pattern of identifying my identity based upon how other people respond. So the fact that like I can see a correlation in patterns, to see this in this particular way with my students is like, with my class as a professor, it's like, oh my gosh, like, I'm doing this in a lot more ways than I thought I am, which is like, I didn't get on this. I was like, okay, I see
just more rearing patterns. Its ugly head all over the place.
Yeah. You know, but I think even your insight and your approach of how to make some of those cognitive changes was very helpful. And when you use the word loaded question, I like that language. And I'm a big advocate for identifying language. So when you said, you know, don't use loaded language, I'm like, I do that all the time. You know, I really do. And I like that. And so when it comes to like that practical approach, I'm a very practical person. So when you kind of made those suggestions, okay, cool. I'm like, I'm going to try that. I'm going to practice that. And I get really excited about that kind of stuff because what's the point if I can't apply it? You know?
Right. I just did this with, the woman that I'm in her, a group for her, Catholic moms and, you know, kind of managing our parenting. And she just taught us how to set boundaries. And it just blew my mind because she was talking about the difference between like a boundary and a threat and how, you know, when you talk to your kids and you say, if you do this, this will happen to you, right? If you yell, you're going to get put in your room. You're going into timeout. You're getting whatever, like, you know, hot sauce, whatever it is. If you say a bad word, you're getting, you know, soap in your mouth, whatever. She said a boundary is saying, if you do this, I will do this. So it's not, this will be inflicted upon you. It's not your free will will be disrespected. It's, this is how I am going to respond. And there was such, it felt so clean. It just felt so clean. If you yell at me, I will leave the room. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was just like, it's not about inflicting something on you. It's about protecting my dignity.
Yeah.
And it's just that language, just the language that we use is so powerful to our own brains, to other people. And when someone points it out, it's like, oh, I see what I was doing there. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had this like tiger is after me in the jungle thing going on in my brain. And it was like, didn't need to be quite so, you know, cause, and you know, my coach always says that your brain constantly wants you to think you're about to die. And its whole job is to keep you alive, you know? Mm-hmm. So everything is dramatic. And she talks about like, if you feel like you might not be accepted in a group of people, it comes from that primitive part of our brain that used to need the tribe in order to survive. Mm-hmm. We did exist in an environment at some point in primitive mankind where if you got kicked out of the tribe, you died. That's not the case anymore, but our brain still wants to believe that. So if this group doesn't love me, I'm going to die. And that's just not true, but that's the thought that's being offered. So it's just fascinating.
Wow. So we're coming to the end of our time here. So Liz, I'd love to, as the coach that's been coaching today, what is like a summary of what you want people to take away from tonight, from the coaching session and just from coaching?
Again, I think it's just, you can change your day around in 20 minutes and you can start by recognizing what my friend, my fellow coach and friend Catherine calls the T, your thought, emotion, and action. If you just take note of what are you thinking, what's it making you feel, and how's it helping you show up, and just look and see if it's useful. Is it serving you? And if it's not, consider something else that you can believe right now that will help you feel a way that you want to feel and act a way you want to act. So it can just be, it can be such a simple shift. You know, one of my favorite coaches one time said that you can't go from saying I'm a bad mom to saying I'm a good mom, but you can go from I'm a bad mom to I'm a mom. Mm-hmm. It's more true. It's just factual. There's no loaded words in there. Right. Yep. So again, just if you're feeling yucky, sometimes we think the feeling came first. It never did. There was a thought that informed the feeling. So if you're feeling really yucky, name the emotion and then look for the thought. What am I thinking? And then just ask yourself how it's serving you. And if there's something else that's more just as true, but more helpful.
Beautiful. Well, thank you both for doing this, for showing us what coaching is like. Thank you, Jacob, for putting that out there and being the client here. And you all, thank you for listening in to Who You Gonna Call. Join us next time when we have a therapy session. And, by the way, if you are wanting coaching, tune into Tabor Vision with Liz.
Yay.
And I'm sure she'd be happy to do a discovery call and just march onwards with you.
Would love it. So, absolutely love it.
Until our next episode, have a great time. God bless.